You're listening to the CD Baby DIY Music Podcast. Well, we've made it to episode 3 of the CD Baby DIY Music Podcast. My name is Kevin, and today we're talking about booking. And even more specifically, we're talking to a club booker. And if you're not familiar with what a club booker does, they're the person that works for the venue or club, and it's their responsibility to get the musical talent. They take the solicitation emails from the bands, they check out the CDs that come in the mail, and read through all the press kits. And then ultimately, they decide who gets to play and who doesn't. So since that's kind of an ominous task for a lot of artists and this gray area of how exactly do I go about doing that? What's the best approach? We thought that who better than a club booker to enlighten us on improving our skills at getting that job done. So we talked to Alicia Rose, who is the club booker for the Doug Fir Lounge here in Portland, Oregon. And the Doug Fir Lounge, to set the stage, is what I would consider a premium club. It's not the club that you're generally starting out at. It's the club that's the jumping point to bigger and better things. They have an amazing sound system. It's an awesome room to play. And not only are they known for having great music, but they have a pretty great restaurant as well and have received almost as much press for the design and architecture of the place as they have the music. So it's definitely worth checking out. You can find them on the web at www.dougfirlounge.com. And just so you know, we asked Alicia to be brutally honest. You know, we want to know what is going to get her attention and how she does her job best. So just keep that in mind when you listen to the interview and know that not every club booker is going to have the same opinions. But I have a feeling that if you take some of the things that she says to heart, it's really going to improve the return on your efforts for getting your band or yourself shows. So let's jump to that interview.
Here at the end of the war, where the water meets sand, on an Oregon shore, we stand. Where the land cheats the sea, all covered in snow, but it's not really cold at all.
Well, Alicia, why don't you start by telling us what exactly is your role as the club booker for the Doug Fir?
What I do as a club booker for this particular venue, Doug Fir Lounge, is I hold the calendar. I'm responsible for all the shows, one way or the other, filling the calendar so that we have a week's worth of shows or a month's worth of shows. We don't do shows every single night, but we still do shows anywhere from on a light week, 3 or 4, to a heavy week, 7. So it is my job as the filter, as the gatekeeper, to figure out what's going to make it through and what isn't going to make it through. You know, I'm not only focused on national stuff, I'm also focused on local stuff. I make it a point from my perspective to include local scenes in a way that allows everybody a chance to have a crack at this room, which this is a beautiful room. We're lucky. I mean, for me, the reason I went back into club booking, it's a weird gig, you know, but this particular venue, I think, has an amazing sound system, a great aesthetic. And it's a great place where customers like being here, bands like playing here, and the staff likes working here. So all in all, it's a good experience. Now, my job is to make sure that experience is maintained.
For the local band that is looking to get a shot at playing a club like the Doug Fir, what should they have in place or have realistically accomplished before they contact you?
Well, they should at least have some relative draw, first of all. And, you know, they should have an album or something they can show for it. You know, even a demo that looks really good. I mean, I've gotten really rad demos that made me book shows. I was like, this is so good. And their aesthetic was in tune. They kind of knew what they were doing. It didn't look like crap. You know, sometimes it just comes down to expressing your personality in your package. And also in your effort. Because there are a lot of smaller clubs. There's a lot of house parties. There's a lot of ways to make fans. And it's not just playing Doug Fir. You know, this is the end result of a lot of work. Not the end result, but one along the way. You know, maybe Roseland is a different end result. Maybe, you know, being able to tour and play Numos in Seattle is a different end result. But this is a particular part of it. Like, you know, Brabati's or Dante's, the difference with Doug Fir is that we have a super creative directed MO. You know, I'm super specific about why and how I do things. And because of that, it's allowed people to have faith and trust in the brand, whatever that is, of Doug Fir. So people will come to this club and be like, well, I don't know what's going on Tuesday, but I bet it's going to be good. That's a big deal. And that doesn't just happen. That's a year, 2 years. That's people understanding and knowing, like, they go to a restaurant to eat food by the chef. If somebody else is cooking and it sucks, that kind of blows. But, you know, with the nightclub, if they know somebody's cooking in there and they're focused on their experience, they'll start trusting it, letting their defenses down. They'll start accepting the fact that music is art again, and they'll start taking chances as consumers. And so as a band, you've got to think about how you fit into that. Because ultimately, like, I mean, you're busting your... I'm a musician, too. I'm an accordion player. Miss Murgatroyd is my accordion reality. And I've been doing that since I was 20. Now I'm 37. So that's a long time. But as a musician, I relate to the process. And so I think I'm extra tough and extra also forthcoming at the same time because of that. Because I've toured. I've been in a van. I've tour managed. I've managed bands. I've been a musician playing, sleeping on floors and playing in crap holes. I've done it so many times. I'm kind of over it, that part of my career, but it taught me a lot. And ultimately, it's like, you know, you don't get something for nothing. And something is developing a draw. It's telling your 10 friends to come see you play the crappy show at such and such, or having a house party and getting 50 people out and working. When you've got those 50 people, you've got 50 people who came to your house to see you play. Well, give them something to take with them that keeps them informed. Get them to sign up on your mailing list. Develop a draw. Be creative, because you're marketing yourself. And marketing yourself a little bit turns into marketing yourself a lot, turns into having fans, turns into when you come to me and you want a show, you're like, we've been playing all these shows. We played an opening slot for so-and-so at Ash Street. We did something for Bodies. Or maybe we've never played in these places, but we've done the circuit of house shows where now we've got 100 people who are totally into our stuff. And we really want a place to do that. And we have friends in other bands. And what if we did a showcase with our peeps? Like, bring me creativity. I can't do it all. You know, I'm doing it and I'm going to help you do it. But you coming to me with ideas will get you there so much faster. But you got to be able to back it up.
One of the main questions I hear in regards to booking is how do I make that initial contact with the club booker? Is there a way you prefer for artists and bands to make that initial contact? Should they just email you or just send you a press kit?
Let's see. I it tends to happen in a way differently than I would wish for it to happen. It tends to happen where I get sort of random missives from people via email. And if they say the right things, I tend to ask for a CD at that point, or ask them more questions, or not respond at all. It's usually those things. Like, and I don't respond at all a lot of times, because they clearly have no clue. You know, they're emailing me. They have no idea that Doug Fir is 300 capacity. They have no idea of what it takes to get in a room like this. They have no responsibility or accountability for what it takes from their perspective. So when somebody emails me with some understanding of what I do, who I am, what this club is, what I have done for this club, what this club has done for itself, you know, how they need to look at it. Just like I told bands, you know, I used to run a distribution company called Nail for many years, and I would tell bands who'd always want to get distribution, I'd be like, you know, you don't need a distributor until you're ready for one. You know, you don't need to be playing at Doug Fir until you have the chops and the draw to merit that play. I mean, I put nationals through the ringer all the time. I mean, people want their band so-and-so to come play. I'm like, well, why? What's the history? You know, when did they play the last time in Portland? How many people came? What was the ticket price? How much did they make? I mean, I ask a million different questions. Those are the questions I'd be asking you too, as a band. But most local bands can't answer those questions. They can be a little less tangible. That's okay. Sometimes just knowing that you're best friends with the Thermals and you could get Hutch and Kathy to play with you, that might be enough for me to give you a chance, because that's pretty juicy for me. I'm looking for an angle for every show, you know, and I'm willing to hear out every genre, but it has to be quality in that genre, or it's just a waste of time for everybody. So, you know, I book, you know, jam bands. I'm not a jam fan. I'm actually really not at all. And I'm a little more goth, my personal sense. I lived in San Francisco for almost a decade, and, you know, grew some aversions to that scene. But, you know, I don't have a problem booking bands that are good in any genre. And that's, I think, the saving grace of this venue, because it could easily have gone to a more weighted, personal sort of slant like every other club in the world. When you look at a lot of venues, the ones that really shine are ones that have, you know, either a super specific bent that's broad enough, that's interesting, and quality deliverance and the experience is good, or you get a club like this that really understands what good music is. More so than, you know, I'm going to book all punk rock, or I'm going to book all emo, or I'm going to book all folk, which is a lot of times what happens at clubs, because the owner or the booker is so, like, so into one genre, they have a hard time seeing outside of that. But that's not the way I roll. You know, I'm a music fan. I've been in the music business for 20 years, 21, since I was 16. I've DJed for 5 years at KUSF in San Francisco. I ran a distribution company. I like it all when it's good. Think in terms of what would make you go buy it. Think in terms of what would make you go see a show. Think in terms of, that's how I do it. How do I book this club? How do I do anything? I think of what I would do. Like, what would get me out the door? What would make me look at a record? What would it? And I have a high barometer. Like, it's got to be good. But that's how I hold myself. And I expect the bands to hold themselves to that same point. And when they come to me with total boneheaded BS, I just don't even respond.
For an up-and-coming band that does get through to you and you have an interest in booking them, what sort of time slot should they expect their first time out? Do you start with them on a slower night that doesn't have really much going on? Or do you put them opening for another band that is more established?
Bands that do get through, you know, and do get through to me, whichever way they do, whether it's with their music or, you know, word of mouth or an email or whatever it is, you know, a friend telling me, who knows? There's different ways. I mean, if their music is that amazing, I might give them a national opening slot. That's not as likely as the potential of a, like, Alex Steininger, who works with you guys. You know, he does a Music We Trust showcases once a month that are free, our only free showcases. You know, he has the ability to book whoever he wants. There's a start. Get on him for a minute. You know, stop bugging me. Sorry. And then B, another way is, you know, but really what I do more than that, because that's just one aspect, I do things called Log Love showcases, which are my my version of kind of cheap, local, rad, well-curated bills. A lot of times those are collaborations between me and band A, you know, whoever it is, who's just enthusiastic, been working hard. They want to play Doug Fir. They know what Doug Fir is. They get it. They understand it's going to take some work. And I have this conversation ongoing with so many people all the time. I try to explain to them constantly why, like, what it takes to actually make it worth my while. But at the end of the day, if they come to me and say, well, you know, we've got friends in bands. You know, this happens all the time. All these Log Love showcases are starting with the band I really like, and then we're batting back suggestions back and forth. Well, I don't think they have the draw. Well, I'm friends with Heroes and Villains and Loch Lomond. What if I did a show with them? Okay, well, I respond like, okay, that could work, but that's, okay, that might be a Saturday night because they've done really well here. But on a smaller level, I might be like, well, we could do a Log Love show on a Tuesday for $6. There's a sliding scale where we pay bands, and it's basically based on you get X amount no matter what, but then you make more at 200 paid and more at 300 paid. It's a non-traditional scale of paying bands, but it helps them psychologically understand that there's work to be done. If you bust ass, you make money. I'm not just going to hand it to you for the sake of handing it to you. It's not, this is a business. They've got it. You've got to give back to me. If you want us to survive as a venue, you've got to help us prosper.
Earlier you made mention of the press kit. What exactly do you like to see in the press kit when you open it up? What do you want them to have in there?
Well, it depends on the band and what your MO is as a band and what's going to represent you as a band. I don't want it to all be the same. There isn't one answer. I've gotten some press kits with candy and toys and silly stuff, and it's the band. You know, it's like it represents, they're kind of silly. They're goofy. They've got a bento. I've gotten bizarre packages that are ridiculous. They have horrible band photos and a manila folder. Nuh-uh, never works. The folder's never a good idea. But, you know, getting a CD that's well put together, that packaging is tight, maybe a picture if it's a good one and not one your grandma took, although maybe grandma would do better than most of the ones I've seen. But I'm also a photographer of bands, and so for me, that's like a real point of contention. I'd rather there not be a picture of you, but an amazing CD and a really cool hat, you know, a personal note that explains some things, you know? So, you know, it's professional. I want certain things, a CD, maybe a picture if it's good, maybe a note, maybe a one sheet if you have a one sheet or a bio, sure.
Some bands will throw in, you know, all the latest articles about them and all the latest reviews for their album. Is that helpful to you?
I don't want that. I can look that up. You know, I just want to know if the music is good. A brief one sheet would be fine. I'm always cool for that.
You've talked a lot about what a band should be doing and where they should be at in their career to be playing at the Doug Fir. On the other side, does the Doug Fir do anything to help them promote the show and let people know what's going on?
We put a lot of individual and intentional promotion into every show. We describe every show in this email newsletter that goes out to all these people, and we give tickets away. We do posters. We get those up. We do ads in the One Week in the Mercury. They're beautiful ads. We do as much as we can do to kind of get the word out. We do press releases to press, because over 200 people every 2 weeks. I mean, there's a lot. One of my points of pride here is that every local show gets the same amount of promotion as a national show. So, you know, you work hard to be able to play a venue like this, and it pays off. If you continue working hard, you can't expect anybody to hand it to you.
Is there ever a time where you give a brand new band that you've never even heard of a shot, like a CD shows up on your desk and you're just blown away by the music, so you just book them, even if they don't really have a draw yet?
All the time. I mean, sometimes music is just the most, obviously music is the most important thing. I mean, at the end of the day, like it happened with Boy Eats Drum Machine. This is just a perfect example of that exact thing. I got a demo from Johnny from Boy Eats Drum Machine. I'd never heard of them ever. They had no history, nothing. But I got a sense when I opened that package. I looked at the artwork that he created. I listened to the record. I was like, who is this guy? And where did he come from? And what the hell? And I got really excited about it. Just immediately, I didn't matter. So because I liked his music, I gave him an opening slot, opening his very first show, opening for Princess Superstar. Because it made sense. It was the right fit aesthetically. And I thought, well, I want to see him. So sure, absolutely, no problem. It didn't matter if he had a draw, because his music was that good. And I knew that he would eventually if he stuck to it, and he does now.
Well, why don't we take a break and check out a track by Boy Eats Drum Machine. This song is called 3,000 Flares, and it's off of their upcoming album called Two Ghosts.
This is a warning, you are losing one of your sons. I've fallen away from my occupation. When I push the pencil, they load the shells that turn heaven into warning shot across the bow in hindsight. 3,000 flares didn't do nothing but light up the sky. And fall as limp reflections in your eyes. So this sun says goodbye.
We're back with Alicia Rose, club booker for the Doug Fir Lounge in Portland, Oregon. And Alicia, I was just wondering about the money side of things. Is there a typical amount that you pay to a local artist when they perform, or is it change from night to night?
It ranges. I mean, a lot of these Loglove shows, you get paid $50 to start, and then a sliding scale, another $50, and maybe that's negotiable depending on what you deserve. What's your history? You know, as a band, have you played enough shows that I know you're going to bring 100 people because people are excited about seeing you play? Well, that means maybe I'll put you on as an opener for a national. That could be anywhere from $50 when it's really sad to $250, maybe more if you're amazing, you know, but mostly it's up to $250, even for those support slots. That's about as far as it goes. You get beer, you get water, done. You're supporting a national act. If you're opening for Spoon, there's no complaining with getting $250. You know what I mean? Like whatever it is. But, you know, it happens with local stuff. I mean, I tend to do, if a band really merits, if their draw is worth it, I'll start at larger numbers. And, you know, sometimes the Loglove shows can translate to regular shows. And once that starts, bands can earn overage. And if a band is really doing 200 people, they're going to earn a guarantee from me. I'll start out with an amount that seems reasonable, whether that's $150 or to $500 to $600 to $1,000, whatever it is. And that's proportionate to ticket price. So, you know, at a $10 ticket price, I can afford to pay a band more.
you're seeing a ton of bands come through that are out there trying to get exposure for their music, both local artists and national acts. Do you see anything in particular that they're doing that seems to be working to get the word out and increase their fan base? Any common threads between, you know, what you see night after night?
Well, it really just comes down to networking, I think, on a certain level. MySpace is one way to do that, but it's the interweb. Sorry, I like to call it that. Anyways, but it's, you know, it's the internet, so it's not physical, you know, so you're not actually working to deal with it. I mean, sometimes just if your friend owns a cafe and you give them a CD, them playing it, maybe it's, you know, going to shows and seeing other bands that then become your friends, and then there's power in numbers. It's like, get out there, deal with it, be a part of your scene. You know, the more you do that, the more naturally you'll wind up coming back to me, because eventually you're friends with so-and-so's. It just makes sense. Everything just starts to become easy. When it's a struggle, it's usually not right. When it starts to make sense, you're going in the right direction. When things start just happening, it's because you're kicking butt. But, you know, you have to start with a smaller struggle first. Start with the Ash Street. Start with, you know, Mississippi Studios. Start with, the Someday Lounge, Town Lounge. You know, venues that are smaller, venues that have a different kind of booking policy, venues that need 100 people to make something go off. You know, Doug Fir should be down that road. Like I said, we have our own set of parameters. You know, and I really need to have 200 people in the room here for it to make sense to have a show. You know, but not every band can provide that. So if you can't, think of how you can. Think outside the box. Who can you combine with to make that happen? How can you increase your draw? I mean, you know, you can make postcards, make stickers, talk to people, go into record stores, get them excited, give them a record, go into cafes, give them your record, go, you know, read magazines, figure out what else is going on, figure out who your friends should be, you know, get excited, play with them, you know, collaborate, expand your mind. I mean, there's a million ways to do it. Just making friends is kind of the crux of it, though, and being friendly and not being a jerk off. That helps.
We're in Portland, and say there's a band that's in Seattle or San Francisco or some other town driving distance from here. In their hometown, they're consistently drawing around 200 a night, and they're trying to venture out. Is that a show that would be of interest for you, where they're just trying to break into the Portland scene for the first time?
That's a lot rougher, actually. And it's like one out of 20 bands maybe I book from Portland, one out of 50 from outside. So package tours, that's a good way. If you're really good peeps and you're doing the tour circuit and you make friends with other people in other cities, show swaps is a really good way to do it. So like, say, I know, Binary Dolls were doing some show swap with the band in Seattle so that they came here and they went there. So the band in Seattle helped sort of, you know, like bookend their draw there, and then Binary Dolls help bookend the draw here. So, you know, figure that out. MySpace is a beautiful thing, man. Figure out who you connect with, become friends with them, ask them for favors. Don't ask me for a favor. Bring me something that makes sense. Ask your friends for a favor.
How often do you think a local band should be playing in their own hometown?
Well, once a week is too much. Twice a month is fine. Once a month, if you're big enough and you need to actually keep while you're still building your draw, you really can't play too much. Once you realize you can't get all your friends out once a week, because now everybody does want to go see you, you know, maximize and minimize. So play once every couple of weeks when it makes that kind of slow it down. Then when you really have a draw and you want to bring more power to that, slow it down even further and make more money. You know, because if you've got 100 people, 150 people who will come out and see your show, you know, do one once a month. And then eventually when you're making a lot of money, do one every 6 weeks and then tour other markets in between. That's kind of the process. So at first, play as much as you can. Get any show. Play in your basement. Play in the street. I don't care. Get people excited. Get them on your mailing list. Develop your fan base. You got to do it somehow. And you can't pretend to be strategic when you don't have fans to be strategic for. It's like your strategy has to be created and built. It can't just arrive. You know, and so how do you develop fans? By making friends, by getting out there. Just, you know, just do your best. Don't worry about getting paid. Just don't, you know, just worry about playing.
How long before you'll ask a band back? You know, they came, they played. It was a great experience for both the Doug Fir and them. How long before you'll put them back on the schedule?
It depends. I mean, if the band just happens to fit with something national, it could be a month. It could be worst case, like a few weeks is for a couple of artists here and again because of circumstances. But on a general basis, probably once every 3 months, once every quarter, You know, other than that, it's oversaturation for this room, but it's happened where a band has played here more than that. It's just circumstances. I mean, maybe I'll do a Loglove show with them, then just so happens so-and-so requests them as national support. You know, it's just how it goes. But there's no real standard. But I would say once every 3-4 months is pretty solid. That's usually what it winds up being for the bands that can have a draw.
Well, that's all the questions I had. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us.
My pleasure, Kevin.
All right, well, we're back for another roundtable discussion. Again, my name's Kevin, and joining me are...
Christopher.
And Robert.
Chris and Robert. And I have to say, when we started putting together the idea of this podcast, this interview was one of the ones I was looking forward to the most, just because the club booker seems to be kind of the person that's somewhat shrouded in mystery. You know, they don't have a typical office...
Yeah.
You just can't give them a call usually and get them on the phone, and you just kind of feel like you're sending your package off into no man's land, and maybe you'll hear back, so maybe you won't. So I thought this was one of the interviews I was looking forward to kind of get some real feedback that would be helpful for artists. So what were you guys' first impressions of it?
I thought it was really good and very blunt, and hopefully it will be a reality check for... a lot of artists who do expect to just send one email or a Sonic Bids link and all of a sudden have this great booking out of it. It's a lot more work involved. So,
I thought it was really interesting because I hadn't really considered bookers very much in my musical career. And like talking and listening to Alicia really gave me the impression that how important it is to develop a relationship or to consider them, you know? I mean, she's basically the, she's the gatekeeper, like, and you really need to befriend her and pay attention to her. And if you don't, then you probably won't get gigs at that venue anymore or at all.
Yeah, and one of the things I noted was that there's a lot of books out there about how to have a successful career, and some of them have good advice, but I can't recall ever reading one that had any information from the booker's perspective.
Yeah.
Not one. And it's all been, this is what you need to do, this is what you want as an artist. And I think, you know, that's only half the equation. The club booker's the other half. They're doing a job as well. They're not just there, hey, somebody, we need bands. They've got, you know, they've got bills to pay, they've got bosses to please, and you know, it's a business, and
yeah.
And so they've got things that they need to accomplish as well, and I think approaching them with that respect will get you a lot further than just what are you going to do for me, you
know? right.
I like the word she used, the word juicy. She needs something juicy when she's going to book your show, and I've written her a bunch of times, and different bands I've been have played there about 6 times, and sometimes she writes me back, sometimes she doesn't. So it's interesting to see what was in the emails that she responded to. And it is always something that's an extra special event. Like one of them was a triple CD release party. She wrote me back in a half hour. Sometimes I'll write and just be like, hey, anything open? No response. So it's all how you're selling yourself to her.
Yeah, and it is an ongoing relationship. And sometimes, you know, she might be really looking to fill a slot, and sometimes she might be thinking, man, I've got more bands than I can handle, and
right.
It's really hard to get back to everybody. So, I mean, that's always something to be considered.
Definitely. It was really interesting to hear her talk about what sort of things, you know, would catch her eye when they came through in the mail, and with all the material, all the CDs and press packets and everything that she does receive, you know, to hear her talk about the sort of things that might catch her eye and the sort of things that she might just gloss over, and how much packaging actually does matter.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
It kind of ties in with what Lisa Lapine was saying in the previous podcast about the music being the last important thing. You've got to package it right. You've got to make your one sheet or whatever kind of material you're sending in have it be really attractive so she gets to that point to put the CD in.
Totally.
Yeah, and I think along with the press kit, I think the temptation would be there to just, you know, she was talking about how some people put toys in or food or whatever. The temptation would be to go make some press kit that totally misrepresents
who you are as a band, right. Or it just doesn't, you're like, well, I put toys in there and I didn't hear back. Well, you know, that didn't fit the vibe of your band. The reason that worked is because that's the kind of band you were, and it just worked. But I think so many people just try to fit everything in there. And one thing she did note that I thought was interesting is that, you know, not too long ago, it was typical for you to put like 2 or 3, 4 newspaper articles in with your press kit.
Right.
But I thought it was interesting to hear her say, you know, just don't even worry about that. If, you know, I can find anything I want on the internet.
Totally.
So don't even mess with that. And especially, a band gave me a press kit once. And not only did they, you know, not photocopy the article, they had stuffed the entire living section of their newspaper into the press kit.
Yeah.
They didn't even cut out the article. And so I thought the news about their town and other things was more interesting than the article. It's just funny. What's going on in their town? It's just like, but that was a waste of postage. And no one who's looking to book a show is going to read that. They're just going to go, what is this?
Well, it's amazing, too, how little research sometimes people do. I mean, we get press kits at CD Baby. And there's no reason. I mean, anybody can sign up with us.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I wrote down after kind of listening to the interview again was about educating yourself, and not only about, you know, who's there at the club booking, but what that club even does.
Yeah.
I mean, so many people will just randomly send out stuff to everybody, and they're wondering why they're not having any hits off of that, or people interested in having them play, and it's just like, because you
sent a heavy metal CD to a folk radio station or a folk club or something.
And it's obvious to them right from the bat you don't know what you're doing, because your music is not what they do there, and it's just so much time and money can get wasted on that thing and sending stuff around. And you know, if you just kind of pick a couple clubs, know my music fits here, and I'm gonna start building a relationship with not only the club bookers there, but the bands that play there, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's like you can shoot 1,000 arrows at a target, and maybe 2 will get kind of close, but if you just kind of take your time and aim at a couple of good targets, you probably do a little bit better.
Yeah.
And save a whole lot of money.
And a big note I wrote was along those lines is focus locally, because I think the temptation as well with the internet is to, like, well, I can contact everyone in the U.S. I can contact the whole world. And so they spend all this time shooting emails and stuff to people that it's like, what? Someone from California just emailed me about their music. I'm in Boston. What do I care?
They're never going to come to your show unless you happen to be going through their hometown.
And I think if you just focus locally, building fans, building relationships with other musicians, you're really going to start to see things happen. And I know in our last podcast, Lisa talked a lot about that. And I think that's going to be a continuous theme as we talk to other people throughout the podcast. You're going to see that that's one key element to what they did. No matter what style of music, no matter what they're doing in the music industry, that's going to be a key element to why they're having some success.
I think another thing that this interview sort of made me think about and opened my eyes to is that it's really a responsibility to play a venue. Someone has allowed you to come into their place of business and work for them. Mm-hmm. You know, even though it's for just one night, you have basically agreed to do a job, you know? And like, if you don't do the job well, you know, if you don't do what is expected of you, then, you know, you're not gonna get paid as well. You're not gonna get asked back, you know?
That's one thing I wish we had asked her. I've played the Doug Fir, you know, a number of times, and sometimes there have been at capacity, you know, 300 people. Sometimes, like a few weeks ago, there was, 40 people there, maybe? It was very pathetic.
It was still great, Chris. It was still great.
But anyways, I wish we had asked her, like, what are the consequences for having a bad night? What are the rewards for having a good night?
Right.
In a more tangible sense than just, oh, we'll have you back, or I won't have you back, like...
I'm sure she has. I mean, I don't know how you would keep track of these things, whether she just remembers or if she has a list of bands that, like, fill the venue. But I'm sure that she has go-to bands, you know, that, like, they succeed enough times, they win enough points, and they're on the list.
And is there a little book, a dusty book?
Is there a dusty book? And how do I get into it? Alicia's Black Book.
Going back to previous point you'd made, Kevin, is like the importance of brevity when you're contacting people. I booked a tour earlier in the year and started off with this idea that these people have to know how good I am. So I sent them all these sort of links and information, and I'm releasing this CD and I'm doing this and here's all my press, and didn't get much response. So I took a different approach, which was like, hey, coming through town, this date, got anything open? And I booked the tour in like 2 weeks. They all wrote back.
That's great.
Yeah, I think one thing she hit on a couple times in the interview is she could just tell when someone, the way they approached her, if they were the real deal or not. Or, you know, if they were someone who was just kind of spamming people, their emails and you know, what they're saying probably is more along the lines of just an advertisement, where somebody's like, hey, you know, we're this band, we've done this, we're going to be in town, do you have anything? To her, she's reading tons of email and probably going, huh, they, you know, they got to the point, they seem to know how things work, and sure, I'll give it a listen, you know. And like she said, she says no a lot, but eventually she'll say yes, you know.
Yeah.
I think one thing to mention about the Doug Fir, as opposed to other clubs, because she mentions a couple other clubs in the podcast, in the interview, and might be for confusing for people not in Portland, but when she talks about other clubs, it wasn't necessarily to say that they're better than those other clubs or whatever, but they're different. And there's the kind of club that, you know, that you start out at, and that's where you, you know, start getting some fans. And then you kind of hopefully build up to a kind of club like the Doug Fir. And one thing that kind of sets them apart is that they advertise their shows like crazy. And they really have a really unique vibe and a whole package. And so that's why you should definitely check out the link on the podcast website to see the Doug Fir Lounge, because it's a really cool venue.
It'll spoil you too. I mean, you get a, if you're a headliner, you get a 4 o'clock sound check, you roll in, everyone's very professional.
And it's one of the venues out there that, you know, I've, like Alicia says, I mean, after listening to her, that they've really built kind of a brand where you know that, I don't know what's going on, but I bet if I go there, it's good.
Yeah.
I mean, they also have a very good restaurant upstairs with a cool vibe and
Hotel attached.
Yeah, hotel attached, and it's the whole package, and it just makes a very cool experience.
And it's not, you know, I mean, it's an independent venue. It's not huge. It's still, you know, it's a nice sized club for sure, but it's kind of a premium club, you know.
Yeah. With all this, I mean, there is to be considered that, you know, this is just one club. This is just one club booker. There are thousands out there.
Right.
And they're all going to be different. They're all going to have their things that they like, things they don't like. And I don't think that you should just hear the interview with Alicia and think everyone's going to respond exactly the way she does.
Right.
I think what you need to take is the information that she presents and kind of go, okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Let me get to know the club booker at the clubs in my town that I want to play.
Definitely.
Better.
I think you focus your efforts on targeting a person and then developing a person-to-person relationship with them. And don't just send them an email, but know who these people are that you're dealing with and become their friends, because it is still really all about who you know.
And being a polite band that recognizes, I mean, it feels good just as a person to be recognized and thanked for a job that you do. And being a band that recognizes that and thanks their booker and communicates with them well and is, you know, doesn't leave a trash heap on the stage when they and gets their stuff off stage on time and, you know, like does that sort of stuff is, you know, that sort of stuff is going to win almost as many points as just being a good band, you know?
That stuff is actually huge. The band I was in, Small Town Poets, when we were touring, we would send everybody we did an interview, anybody we basically had any sort of professional contact with, the booking agent, the promoter for the show, we sent them a thank you note, like right after the show in the mail, and we got so much positive feedback. People asked us back just solely on that, just because they felt appreciated, like we didn't come in. It's like, we've had so many bands, they just come in and just make us feel like crap for having them there and treat us like garbage, and you guys gave me a huge thank you and made sure to come and shake my hand and say thanks in person, and man, I want you back. And that stuff goes a long way. You can't forget that they're people too, you know?
Yeah. I know that I think after this that that it's probably changed the way that I'll respond towards bookers and venues in the future for future shows. Like I definitely
won't try blackmail anymore.
Yeah, I definitely have made some, you know, not necessarily. I think I probably just in the past not paid as much attention to how, you know, to those people. Probably possibly just because I was shy. But you know, it is important.
It is tough because I know how it is. You know, I'm not Mr. Personality. Everybody look at me. But you know, it's like. I need to go because one, I'm appreciative of what they've done, but also I want them to see me face to face and go, hey, you know, he means it and wants to come back, and
yeah,
and it was good working with him, so we'll have him back. You know,
I suppose it's easy to adopt that kind of attitude of that these are people in power who hold something over you, but really, I mean, you have a service you can offer them too, and if the fit is right, then it'll be a good night for everyone. So.
Yeah, it is a 50-50 relationship. If they decline everybody to play at their club, well, they don't have a club anymore.
Right.
And so they want bands. It's just finding a way to cut through some of the stuff that they get inundated with that is just people spamming them or just sending random press kits and things that don't grab their attention.
Yeah.
And so.
And not to be too discouraged, I mean, she does, you know, on one hand, she does kind of say, like, I'm, you know, I'm the linebacker. You have to get past me to play the good club. But then she also turns around and she says, you know, but if you got friends that are going to bring in an audience, you know, if you know how to bring in, you know, 200 people or 300 people, like, then how many does she...
300 is the max. 200 was kind of like what she likes to
do. What she likes, 200. So if you can do that, you know, like, she's willing to give you a chance, so.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, she has a boss, too.
Yeah.
If every night the club is empty, she's going to have to find new work. And so, yeah, I think the last thing I would say to people is when you're putting together shows or trying to get bookings is, man, we've had two interviews where they couldn't stress more about hooking up with other bands in your community.
Yeah.
And that's how it's going to happen. I mean, not only for learning their experiences, like, you know, hey, what's the best way to get through to the person that books this club or that club? Not only that, but why don't we play a show together? I mean, I've done that before with a local band I've been in where it's like, you know what, that other band, they're kicking butt. Let's do some shows with them, you know, and we'll even let them headline, you know.
Yeah.
It's because we know that they bring a lot of people, and it's good to be associated with people that bring in a lot of people.
Definitely.
And
definitely.
And that's how you're going to build your fan base. And so you just can't always think about yourself. And if you have a community approach, I think you're going to get much further.
Yeah, and even if you're not directly getting to bookers or to press or whoever through these friends you're making, those friends might spread the word, and eventually it's going to get to them. So the more people you know, the faster the word's going to spread, for sure.
Yep. All right. Well, I think that does it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Go out and get some shows.
Well, that's going to conclude yet another edition of the CD Baby DIY Music Podcast. And I know after hearing the show and listening to Alicia talk that there has to be some good thoughts and ideas and stories out there regarding booking. So if you've got something that you want to share, maybe a tip or even something that was a total disaster, we'd love to hear it and we'll share it with everyone on the show. You can email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com. And if you were listening to one of the previous episodes, you'll note that that is a new email address. But send us an email. We really want this to be a forum where everyone shares their ideas and it's not just us talking. We want to hear from you and see what else is going on out there and what successes you may be having. So don't forget to send that email. And also, we have some show notes up on cdbabypodcast.com. And for this episode, since Alicia made a lot of references to some of the local scene here in Portland, different clubs, we put up a little guide to the Portland club scene that she mentions just to help you understand what she's talking about when she mentions this club or that club and how it relates to what the Doug Fir does. All right, that's it. We'll see you next time. It's over, my love. Now we're just a piece of the scenery in a painting signed anonymous. Over, my love. Over, just out of reach. In retrospect, I guess I loved you too much. Loved you too much. Loved you, loved you. And all I really needed was someone to touch. Someone You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Music Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.